This is a WTOP original podcast.
From Podcast One.
Coming up in this episode of Target USA.
Russia's having trouble getting people to fight against Ukraine, so they're resorting to alternative methods.
They are trying to mobilize people on the temporarily occupied territories.
Yuri Sack, an advisor to Ukraine's Minister of Defense, says it's not working.
Because nobody wants to go and die. They get no training, they get no preparation, they're just thrown into this meat grinder warfare.
And Sack says there's another true sign of Russian desperation that's emerging.
Russians are now actually releasing prisoners from prisons in return for their service for the army.
But he says that too is backfiring.
Our defense intelligence reports that, you know, most of these guys, they will just run away.
The latest on the war in Ukraine, coming up on this episode of Target USA,
the National Security Podcast.
From WTOP in Washington, D.C., this is Target USA. Russia
could render huge harm to this country.
North Korea's secret missile,
capable of reaching the whole of the United States.
Dangerous terrorist.
D.C. is repeatedly mentioned as someplace they would like to seek an attack.
Cyber criminal.
Decryption successful.
America has a target on its back. And on this program, we investigate the threats, the people behind them, the agencies fighting them, and the impact on you. This is Target USA,
the National Security Podcast.
I'm J.J. Green. Every day there are new developments in Ukraine. We learn about a lot of it from news outlets like this one, and we learn about it from social media, mostly, from people who are posting things that they've learned about. But I found the best source of information for us as far as the war in Ukraine goes is Yuri Sack. He's a special advisor to the Minister of Defense in Ukraine, and he joins us on this episode to discuss it. Yuri, thank you for taking time to talk to us. It's been a while since we've engaged with you. You've been a very busy man, as well as the rest of the country and the military there.
Yeah, indeed. Good to be back.
Yeah. Where do things stand right now today?
Well, you know, if you and I, if we had this conversation about 2 weeks ago, then I would have been probably more grim and less optimistic. But since recently, and if you look at the timeline of this war, we can state that after the orderly withdrawal of Ukrainian troops from Lysychansk in Luhansk region, Ukrainian army in the east has fallen back on the pre-prepared defense lines and is holding back the enemy very efficiently, because during the last 2 weeks, the enemy, you know, they haven't made any territorial gains. The offensive that they launched earlier, and the offensive, the military objective of which was for them to gain full control of the Donbas area, which includes Luhansk and Donetsk regions. Now, that hasn't materialized. And so from this perspective, we are probably, you know, looking at a more stabilized front line, which is very important. Of course, a key part in this, a key role in this, was played by the Ukrainian, by the use of the Ukrainian army of the HIMARS systems, which we received from the US and which we are efficiently using on the front lines. So what that meant is, in practical terms, is that during the last 10 or so days, by using these HIMARS systems, Ukrainian armed forces have been able to destroy over 50 ammunition depots, warehouses, and command centers of the Russian aggressor, which means that we have disrupted entirely their logistics, and it means that they've had to withdraw their logistic hubs to beyond 100 kilometers from the front line, which means that the intensity of the artillery shelling, which we have discussed with you before on our calls, and you remember the previous times I was using words like a barrage of artillery, a rain of artillery shelling. So now it has decreased considerably. And of course, because this is the only way these war criminals know how to fight.
Yeah,
this is the only thing that they were able to do, right? So they are unable to beat Ukrainian soldiers on the battlefield. So what they were doing, they would, first of all, destroy the whole cities, raise them to the ground by using artillery, and then they move in with the infantry and, you know, they move in when the Ukrainian army would withdraw because essentially there would be nothing left to defend.
Yuri,
so the situation,
sorry, what is it about the HIMARS that allowed you to do this? What are the characteristics, the capabilities that the HIMARS give you that allowed you to do this work that essentially set back the Russian effort?
Look, I just want to, before I tell you about the characteristics of the HIMARS systems, I just want to tell you and your listeners that by now, HIMARS is a household name in Ukraine, just like Javelins and Stingers were 2 months ago. And it is very probable that people will start calling their children HIMARS. You know, we have to still decide about the gender, you know, whether HIMARS will be boys or girls. But so indeed, these systems are magnificent in terms of their efficiency on the battlefield. First of all, because they're highly mobile. So these systems, they can relocate so fast. They are pretty much untrackable for the enemy. And, the enemy, I've heard rumors, and this is unconfirmed, but I've heard rumors that Russians are sending, you know, like special, their top elite special operations units to hunt down HIMARSes on the Ukrainian territory, because HIMARSes have become the Russians' nightmare. So they are highly mobile. Second of all, they are highly, these are high precision weapon systems. It means that they are guided by satellite navigation systems, and they are very capable of hitting targets exactly where they should hit them. Unlike the old-fashioned Russian artillery, which they are using. Like, for example, today they have shelled the city of Nikopol, which is in Dnipropetrovsk region. Unfortunately, again, there were civilian casualties. There was a teenage boy who was killed. There were about 9 people who were wounded seriously. 2 people were killed. And this was a strike by the Russian version of Soviet old-style multi-launch rocket systems called Hrad. So these systems, they are not high precision. They hit and they cover the whole area. So 40 missiles are fired at the same time, and they sporadically, arbitrarily hit wherever they fall. They're not guided. They're not high precision. They're not precision at all. So they just, you know, vaguely hit an area. And of course, they hit civilian houses, residential areas, kindergarten, schools, theaters. We have spoken about this before. And of course, this results in casualties. Now, so high precision is number 2, mobility and high precision. And of course, number 3, which is why, you know, why in the first place we were asking for these systems, is their firing range. So their firing range at the moment of the ones that we are getting is 80 kilometers. Now, 80 kilometers is something that we did not have before. And now that we have this 80 kilometer firing range, so you understand that it gives us a capability to push the, you know, the ammunition, we destroyed over 50, right? But it means that within the 80 kilometers line, the enemy is not able to recharge their cannons, to recharge their MLRS systems. And this is, of course, a huge gain for Ukraine. And this is why the Russian offensive has stalled. And they're trying to put on like a good face while the game is foul. But we're seeing these are good results. But at the same time, I have to say that, you know, while we're optimistic about these developments, we're at the same time very, very bitter about the continued tactics of terror, because Russia continues to fire missiles at Ukrainian cities on a daily basis. And since we last spoke, there was a horrendous attack on the city of Vinnytsia, right? During which, like, little children were killed. Children who were walking with their parents in the street, were attending a doctor in the medical center. And, you know, in the blink of a moment, because of this strike, they're dead. So the terror tactics continues, and this is why on a daily basis, we call on our international partners to recognize Russia as a state sponsor of terrorism, because this is what they are. They're war criminals, they're murderers, they're looters, and they are terrorists.
Yeah, you're right. In terms of all of that, one of the things that I'd like to get to, a couple things, just very briefly, a couple of quick questions, quick answers. You know, we talked some time ago about Russia having trouble mobilizing fighters from their military to fight. And in the last few weeks since we've spoken, I've heard that they have resorted to some pretty significant or interesting tactics to try to fill their ranks. What are they doing? How far are they willing to go to try to get people to fight?
Well, look, I've heard, for example, our Minister of Foreign, our Minister of Defense, Mr. Alexei Reznikov, he was delivering a speech at Atlantic Council yesterday, and he said that, for example, during the battle for Severodonetsk, Ukrainian army has destroyed around 11,000 Russian soldiers. But this 11,000 comprises of roughly 9,000 Russian regular army forces and 2,000 of those people who have been forcibly mobilized in Donetsk and Luhansk region, right? In these fake republics, Donetsk People's Republic, fake Donetsk People's Republic and Luhansk People's Republic. So this is number one. So what they're doing is they are trying to mobilize people on the temporarily occupied territories. And of course, this does not help local populations in terms of, you know, being in support of Russia, because nobody wants to go and die, and because they get no training, they get no preparation, they're just thrown as into this meat grinder warfare, which is what Russians call it, right? And they're dying in batches. We've also heard that Russians are now actually releasing prisoners from war from prisons. And promising them, release from their sentences in return for their service for the army. But our defense intelligence reports that, you know, most of these guys, you know, who agree to serve, to leave the prison and join the armed forces, they will just run away because, you know, these are criminals. They're not interested in fighting. They're not motivated. So as soon as they see the battlefield, they will just run the other way. And so, yes, indeed, Russia has a huge problem with resources. They, on the one hand, they have unlimited amounts of resources. On the other hand, they're unable to mobilize them. And, the further this war continues, the worse it will get for Russians.
Yeah, the last thing I'd like to ask you, Yuri, is a couple of days ago, the president announced that there are two high-profile Ukrainian officials that have been removed from their positions, suspended because of concerns about treason. And I don't think he was saying that these individuals themselves were suspected of treason, but people working in their agencies, hundreds of people, lots of cases, and a number of Ukrainians that I've spoken to over the past few days have said that was a huge problem. What's your perspective on this? What have you heard about this?
Well, look, JJ, this process of cleansing of our special forces and special services agencies, it began a long time ago. Now, in 2014, the reason why the Ukrainian army was unable, for example, to resist the annexation of Crimea, and the reason why a lot of things happened the way they did, was exactly because since day one of Ukraine's independence, Russia was investing resources and time into infiltrating their people into our security services, into our military structures, into our, you know, into every area of Ukraine's life, because they knew that, you know, they wanted to rely on their spies and on their people, insiders, in order to disrupt Ukraine's path of independence. So this is not a new problem for us. We knew about this all along. And of course, we as a country, as a government, efforts have been taken before to cleanse our special services and intelligence units from these Russian insiders and Russian traitors. Now, at the same time, the beginning of this war has demonstrated that, you know, there is still a lot of work that needs to be done, because there are still a lot of unanswered questions. One of the big ones is, for example, why was Kherson taken over by Russians so fast? And this is something that will be subject to, you know, further investigation. And of course, the people who, if the investigation uncovers that there are people who have been involved and have made willful acts that resulted in the quick takeover by the aggressors of Kherson, they will be held accountable. But at the same time, according to the president, and this is what he confirmed in a number of his statements following these announcements about the resignation of the general prosecutor and the head of the special service of Ukraine, security service, is that, you know, these people themselves, those who were fired, they themselves, nobody thinks they're traitors. Nobody thinks they have, on the contrary, some of the things that they have done, both, from the beginning of the war, they have been very, you know, patriotic and efficient. Like, for example, you and I, we have discussed how quickly Ukraine is now trying to collect data about the war crimes and bring those people who are the war criminals to justice. So, and to the general prosecutor, Irina Venediktova, who was fired, she was actually, you know, she spearheaded this process. She created good relations with the European investigators, with International Criminal Court, with like people from the EU who are forensic experts and stuff like that. So they both have done good things. But in the view of the president, they have not done enough to ensure that the process of cleansing, the process of getting rid of these traitors inside the ranks of these services, is fast enough. And this is, you know, this is a wartime. We cannot afford, because every day such people remain where they are. Every day a traitor can give away the location of our units, give away other sensitive confidential information. So things need to be happening faster. And this is the reason why they were removed from office.
Well, Yuri, thank you again for taking time to talk to us. I know it's late there, and these are very long days for you. But we always appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, and your information is always spot on and very, very helpful. So thank you again, as always, for talking to us.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you, JD. Speak soon.
That's it for this episode of Target USA. Coming up in our next episode, the war in Ukraine. For people living in the West, especially in the U.S., it's important to understand.
This is our war. This is not Ukraine's war.
Douglas London is a retired CIA senior operations officer. Here's why he says this is our war.
This is Putin attacking one of Europe's largest countries, a country that was aligning itself with the West and moving towards a pluralistic society.
So what's the Kremlin's endgame?
Putin is not going to stop there.
London says the West has tried everything in the book.
We kept looking for resets, giving him off ramps, face saving ways.
He says the only thing Putin wants is total domination. We'll discuss it. That's coming up on the next episode of Target USA. In the meantime, if you have any questions or comments about the program, send me an email. You can reach me at jgreen@wtop.com. The letter J, the color green, one word, at Whiskey Tango Oscar Papa. jgreen@wtop.com. Also, please subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Twitter. We're at TUSA Podcast. That's at Tango Uniform Sierra Alpha Podcast. And if you want more national security news, you can sign up for my newsletter. It's called Inside the Skiff, and you can sign up at WTOP.com/email.
I'm J.J. Green, and this is Target USA,
the National Security Podcast.
Hey, Cobra Kai fans, come hear what Peyton Liss has to say on Kicking It with the Coves this week.
Peyton plays one of my favorite characters, Tori Nichols.
Our stunt coordinators came up with a sort of training background for each character.
That's interesting.
Tori had done a little kickboxing before, so that kind of came in when I first tried to take on Miguel, and why I was cocky enough to think that, you know, I could come in here and I could just make an entrance.
Listen to Kicking It with the Coves now at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast One, and wherever you can sweep your leg and get the podcasts.